right, the next matter is the State versus Branch case. Council, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. If you'd please introduce yourself prior to beginning your arguments, we would appreciate that. And feel free to either lower or raise the podium as you deem appropriate. And I'll give you a few moments to get settled.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Veronica Sergis. I'm with the Office of the Appellate Public Defender, and I represent Devon Branch. We're here today at the state's request, so I'm going to largely rely upon my brief. However, I would like to distill this case down to some key concepts to assist in the court's consideration of the case. The legislature has decreed that when a person's conduct constitutes more than one offense, under 609.035, only one punishment can be imposed. This is true unless there is an exception. The exceptions run the gamut from crimes that are specifically enumerated by the legislature in 609.035 to a multiple victims exception that has been carved out by the judiciary. No exception applies in this case, and therefore Mr. Branch's sentence for second-degree assault must be vacated. The reason that it has to be vacated is that he was convicted of drive-by shooting, which, as the court held in Ferguson, does not have any victims, does not have specific victims. Therefore, the multiple victim exception that the judiciary has created by its own terms does not apply here. And because second degree assault, of course, is not in the list of enumerated offenses, such as burglary, arson, kidnapping, et cetera, as decreed by the legislature, second degree assault is not on that list. And therefore, no exception applies, and Mr. Branch's conviction has, his concurrent sentence for second degree assault must be vacated.
Is there any dispute here, though, when he shot the gun, he shot at the car? I mean, he shot the car?
There's no dispute that he shot toward the car.
All right.
No.
And doesn't the fact he shot toward the car make the people in that car potential victims?
Potential victims. However, two things here. First, the court in Ferguson held that those people were not victims because drive-by shooting by its own terms, by its own elements, does not need a victim. So the Supreme Court reasoned in Ferguson that those people in the car were not victims. Now, in Ferguson, the gentleman in that case, he shot toward a building that had eight occupants, and the state's theory of the case was that each of those eight people were victims. So they were charged, there were eight second-degree assault charges in that case. Here, the state's theory of the case clearly can't have been that the people in the car were victims because there was only one count of second-degree assault that was charged out. Now that...
Because it was charged out doesn't mean that there's only one victim, though, does it?
Well, the state would have a hard time proving that there were more than one victim of second-degree assault if there was only one count of second-degree assault. How could a person...
Isn't it very factually similar to Ferguson, because there they talked about it was a victimless crime, so to speak, because the shooting was of a building, although people were actually hurt. Here, we have a victimless crime because the shooting was at a car, but then a person was hurt. So how is Ferguson not controlling in the sense of, you've got a question look on your face.
I do. I'm sorry. Did you just say that someone was hurt in this case?
No, but I mean, you had a victimless crime here, okay. So... You know, nobody was hurt per se, but there's still the rationale of Ferguson is you can have multiple victims, so to speak, or you can have basically it's an exception, judicially created exception here, right?
I disagree that it's a judicially created exception. The question is, what is the exception? The Ferguson on its own term seems to be very strictly limited to that one circumstance.
Well, I understand that, but it's still persuasive in terms of, I mean, that's a shooting at a building. Here you've got a shooting at a car. But the same rationale, the same concept seems to apply in both situations.
I'm walking a respectful line here because I disagree with the majority's holding in Ferguson for the reasons enunciated in the dissent.
I understand that,
so walking a respectful line. With that said, the court in Ferguson did allow for they didn't speak to whether or not a car would be the same as a building, and so toward. When we compare the two, the court's rationale in Ferguson was that we don't need to know if there were victims inside a building. The person who shoots, he doesn't need to know whether or not there were people inside the building. Here, Mr. Branch clearly knew that there were people inside a car. Therefore,
but he didn't need to know, though.
He didn't need to know. No, that is correct. But then that goes back to our initial question is, what is the exception created by Ferguson? If there were...
Can we just go? The underlying theme of all of these cases involving whether there's whether you're having multiple crimes arising out of a single behavioral incident is whether the punishment is commensurate with what occurred here. Now, you would have to agree here that the fact he shot at the car, which had people in it, certainly made this a more serious matter and a more dangerous situation than if he had just shot at who he intended, if he had just done a shot at the victim he intended to scare.
Yes, which is precisely why the court was entitled to sentence him to a longer sentence on drive-by shooting, which was 48 months. That sentence is not the one that we're challenging here today. What we're challenging is the imposition of the concurrent 36-month sentence. And so when it comes to having the punishment commensurate with the activity and the behavior, it strains. It's hard to believe that vacating a concurrent sentence would somehow depreciate the punishment here. And the reason is this. This is a strictly legal question. Mr. Branch, when I visit him in prison and I say, hey, this is what I'm arguing, he looks at me and he says, well, that's not going to help me, is it? And I said, well, no. You are still getting out of prison on your date. You still are not entitled to any early release programs. But it's something that we can argue legally. So Mr. Branch will not get a windfall if this court vacates his concurrent sentence. And that is another big difference in Ferguson, where under the charging schematic in that case, Ferguson's sentence went from 75 months to 50 months, and that is a large part of why the Supreme Court upheld the longer sentence. Here, it's a concurrent sentence. His out date, his supervised release date is not going to change. The longer sentence is one that we are not challenging.
The underlying problem here is that the Supreme Court has never really been willing to address the issue of transferred intent with the crime of assault in the second degree?
I would tend to agree with that. That's something that I would love to argue at a time that's properly before the Supreme Court.
This court has upheld that at one point, and then when the Supreme Court reviewed it, they took and didn't adopt that analysis. But
there are several issues that I think logically arrive out of cases like these. That would be one of them. I think the bigger issue is that we have a situation where there are no multiple victims in this case. The Supreme Court held that the multiple victim exception does not apply because there are no victims, specific victims, to drive-by shooting, but yet people are victimized. So what do we do with that? The answer in Ferguson was to uphold a sentence, and it was a split court. The answer, but they specifically said that doesn't necessarily apply to cars. Now, this court has held in an unpublished decision in 2012 that it applies to cars, that the Ferguson rationale applies to drive-by shooting of a vehicle.
Any reason that you can think of that we wouldn't apply it to cars? I mean, what's the difference between a car and a building in terms of analysis?
In terms of analysis, I think it's because, so there are two things that this court could rely upon. First, the fact that Neil Hill is unpublished, and that Neil Hill, even in its own footnotes, that's the 2012 case, in its own footnotes recognize some inconsistencies in the Ferguson opinion. The second reason is that, again, the Ferguson opinion seemed to focus on the fact that that the person needs not know who the victims are. Here, something that the Court of Appeals could latch onto is the fact that Mr. Branch could see who the people were in the car. So in that sense, it's something that the Court of Appeals could grab a foothold on. Now, the biggest one, of course, is the fact that the Supreme Court did specifically said we express no opinion about whether or not this applies to cars. With that said, there is no binding precedent that forces this court to hold that Mr. Branch's sentence has to be imposed.
True, but the decision in Edhill is, although it's unpublished, it's still persuasive authority, and it is authority by this court, and it's an opinion written by Judge Wright, who is now Justice Wright on the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Correct, but it's not precedent. It's not binding precedent, and again...
But then how do you get around Ferguson? Because this, in combination to Ferguson, seems to outweigh Edwards in terms of some of the inconsistencies that are highlighted there.
We get around Ferguson by the fact that by its own terms, it doesn't apply necessarily to shooting of a car.
That's just looking at Ferguson alone. How do you get around Ferguson and the Needhill decision? Because Needhill is... more like this decision.
Neil Hill is more like this decision, and I would encourage the court again. I note the fact that the footnotes in that case notice some of the inconsistencies, and this court essentially has a second chance to work around some of those inconsistencies and to show that in a situation like this, the court should be following Minnesota Statute 609.035 and not imposing multiple sentences.
How specifically do you, what's your best argument to get around both Needhill and Ferguson specifically, not just kind of the general?
Right, right.
The statute follows the statute.
Specifically, we note that we distill it down to its key concepts. 609.035 prohibits multiple sentences for conduct created in the same behavioral incident. In order to get around that, there must be an exception. This court looks and says, what is the exception? And that is how this court can decide this, by saying there isn't an exception here. Ferguson did not create a specific judicially created exception, because all it did was limited and clarified the multiple victims rule by holding the drive-by shooting doesn't have a specific victim. So because Ferguson did not create a new judicial exception to 609.035, this court is not bound to follow it.
So. Didn't it create it, though, for shooting of buildings, though?
Not necessarily, because, again, it clarified that there are no multiple victims, that the multiple victim exception, it clarified the multiple victim exception by holding that drive-by shooting, even if a building does not have specific victims. Therefore, the rule that a person can only be sentenced once per victim does not apply. The rule would make sense in Ferguson, that there are not victims of certain drive-by shootings, but the outcome is strictly limited to that particular case, where under the interesting sentencing schematic, that person, Ferguson, would have received a shorter sentence had he only been sentenced for the more serious crime. So I don't believe that it is a judicially created exception. I think that it specifically applies just to Ferguson by its own terms. Because the legislature can create crime-based exceptions and has chosen not to do so with drive-by shooting, this court should hold that Mr. Branch's sentence for second-degree assault must be vacated and remand to the district court with such instructions. Thank you.
You will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Scott Hersey. I'm a special assistant Hennepin County attorney, and I represent the respondent, the state of Minnesota, in this appeal. In State versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court held that for the drive-by shooting statute, the rule against sentencing a defendant for more than one crime for each victim did not apply because the occupants of the building were not victims of the drive-by shooting statute. And it is true, as counsel indicated and as the court has discussed, there is a footnote in Ferguson that said it is offering no opinion as to whether this applies to shooting at an occupied vehicle or at a person. But I submit that this court's decisions in Neil Hill and Lund have answered that. They have indicated that Ferguson does, in fact, apply to those situations. Neil Hill applied the Ferguson rationale to shooting at an occupied vehicle, and Lund applied that rationale to shooting at a person. It appears that appellant is asking the court not to follow Ferguson, and in the brief at least, cited the dissent in Ferguson as the authority for its position. But I would submit that Ferguson, by its logical extension in Neil Hill and Lund, is controlling here, and those two unpublished decisions, particularly Neil Hill, is compelling and persuasive with the facts that we have here. Appellant basically gave four reasons not to apply Ferguson to this case. One was a footnote that's been answered by Neil Hill and Lund, and it relied on the reasoning of the dissent in Ferguson. But, of course, it's the majority that gave its opinion in Ferguson, and that is the controlling rationale. Further, appellant argued that the multiple victims of assault in the second degree, and there were multiple victims there and only one victim here, CLG. But really, Judge Reyes, as you indicated, there were multiple persons present when the appellant shot into the vehicle. The three people in the car, his former significant other, I believe that was her boyfriend in the car, and then, of course, appellant's child, and then there was another person standing next to the car when he actually shot into the vehicle. So there were multiple people here, and there could be multiple victims of the second-degree assault. I don't think it should change the nature of this situation that we have and the dangerousness of it simply because the prosecutor charged fewer second-degree assaults than he or she could have charged. The prosecutor could have charged under Ferguson a second-degree assault for all four of those persons who were present. And I would submit that vacating the second-degree assault conviction in this case would depreciate the seriousness of this. As we saw from the transcript of the sentencing court, that court saw that this was a very serious crime, especially with the appellant's own 3-year-old child in the vehicle and actually shot into the vehicle. The bullet was recovered from the passenger door in fragments. And having that second-degree assault on the appellant's record is important to show the seriousness of his offense and so that the public can see that he's been convicted of these offenses. So I'm asking this court to follow the methodology of State versus Ferguson and the reasoning of Neil Hill and Lund by denying the appellant's request to vacate his second-degree assault conviction. Unless there are further questions, I will conclude.
Wasn't there a logical difference, though, between shooting at a house and shooting at a car in that you're much more able to determine how many people you're shooting at when you shoot at a car?
In certain circumstances, Judge, but you may have circumstances where you have a van with no windows. You have no idea how many people are in there. And the same principle of endangering multiple individuals is there. And I can imagine all sorts of different vehicles where you may not know who is in the vehicle at the time. There are certain vehicles where certainly you can see. You get a vehicle with large windows, things of that nature, perhaps you can. But I would focus on the dangerousness and the risk to the individuals inside the vehicle, just as the court in Ferguson focused on the dangerousness to the occupants in that home. Thank you.
Very briefly, one point is that we're not asking the court to vacate Mr. Branch's conviction. We're asking the court to vacate Mr. Branch's sentence. I think that's an important distinction. And unless the court has any further questions, we will rest on our brief.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It was well briefed and argued. We will take the matter under advisement. Okay. At this time, I think the court will recess.
All rise.